Okay, so we are in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Dalid, chapter 14. And last time we learned about Yonasan's brave attack on a group of Plishtim, his miraculous defeat of them, him and his arms bearer going up against about 20 Plishtim and taking them down. And subsequently, the Plishti camp kind of blew up. They started to go crazy. They started to get scared. Perek Yud Dalid. And we will pick up right after that. Let's see from Pasuk. We're going to go from Pasuk Chaf, verse 20 of Perek Yud Dalid. Okay. So. So it says, Vayizayik Shaul v'chol ha'am asher yito. And Shaul gathered all the nation that was with him. Excuse me. Vayavo ad ha'milchama. And they came to the battle. Vinei ha'isa cherev ish bereyeyu. And behold, they saw the sword of one man in his friend, meaning the there was such a fright and the Plishtim basically lost it. They were now turning and attacking each other. They were all confused. Nehuma gedolim ma'od, like a big confusion in the camp. The ivrim hayu Plishtim ke'etmol shilsham. So I think we mentioned this last time that there were some Jews who were. Some Ivrim who had joined sides with the Plishtim, either they were forced to, I mean, seemingly either way they were forced to. Either it was because they were scared or they were scared for their families.
Was it like the lefties that today, yeah, they'd rather?
I doubt it, but who knows? I didn't see anyone who says that pshat, but.
Was it like the lefties today? They were worried about the
Palestinians.
Jews
more
worried
than,
about the Palestinians instead of what?
Yeah, no, I don't. I imagine not.
Nobody's forcing them.
Yeah.
No, right.
It wasn't like that. So, Asher, so they had gone up in the camp of the Plishtim around. So some Mepharshim learned that they were just. The word saviv, which means they were around on the outskirts of the camp, is somehow means that they weren't necessarily fighting, but they were serving more in the camp. Either way, what happened now that the Plishtim had turned on each other, now those Ivrim who had previously been fighting on the side of the Plishtim now turned against the Plishtim and joined with the Jews. When they saw that the Plishtim were turning on themselves, so now they were no longer scared to fight the Plishtim because the Plishtim themselves were fighting each other. So now they felt free to turn and fight on behalf of the Jews. Also, you know, now that the Jewish people were winning, so also that was also part of what caused them to now turn back and join forces with the Jews again.
Since the Plishtim had restricted the arms manufacturing, would the Ivrim that were with the Plishtim have had weaponry?
It's a good question. Yeah, it's not clear.
Made a difference.
I could hear either way. I could hear that they did because they were fighting on behalf of the Plishtim, and that was helpful. Or maybe they didn't, and they were fighting with whatever they could get their hands on. So as well, all the Jews who had hid in Har Ephraim they now heard that the Plishtim were on the run. Vayad biku gam hema acharem b'melchama. And they also joined, attached themselves to the Jewish army in this battle. Vayosha Hashem b'yom ha'es Yisrael. And Hashem brought salvation on that day to Israel. B'melchama avra ad beis aven. And the battle carried all the way until this place, Beis Aven. V'ish Yisrael, Pasuk Chav Dalet, V'ish Yisrael, Nigas Bayom Ahu. And the Plishtim, the Jews at this time were, I think there's different ways to understand this, but were maybe resistant, Rashi learns, to continue fighting. It seems to be how Rashi learns here. There's another way to I think that's what Rashi means. How you atzim v'nigusim l'lachim v'plishtim. They were resistant. They didn't really want to. They weren't really into the battle in the first place. They were just doing it because they had to. I think it's from the word pressured, like lo yigos by alone. It says that if you see that Shemitah's coming and the loan is going to get removed, because that Shemitah loans get nullified, so it says even then you're not allowed to pressure the borrower to repay, lo yigos. So I think they were pressured on that day to fight, and that's why they were fighting. Vayoel Shaul Esa'am Lemar. And Shaul, he wanted them to keep going. So he made a curse or an oath, and he said, "Arur ha'ish asher yochal lechem ad ha'erev." Cursed is the man who eats bread before evening. V'nikamti me'oivai, I'm going to get revenge from my enemy. V'lo ta'am kol ha'am lechem. So the nation did not eat bread because he wanted them to keep on fighting. No breaks for celebration or anything like that. So he announced this curse. Now the Malbim tells us here that, right, again, like I was saying, Shaul saw that the people were holding back. They weren't chasing down the Plishtim. They didn't seem to be so into the battle, and therefore he made this curse. And the Malbim says it's not so clear exactly what his intent was, because there's two possibilities, he says. He says, first of all, it makes sense that it was common that people would fast Be'es Tzara when they're under attack, right? When they're in a time of difficulty, which is how this story started, which was a huge Plishti army, you know, coming after them. So then it was an ace tzara. It was a time of difficulty. So then you fast, right? However, once they were victorious, which is already now, so then the fast is over. And they should have been able to eat. Shaul said, don't eat. Now, what exactly was he forbidding? So the Malbim says it could be that he was only forbidding bread. Because that's what he said, right? He said, don't eat bread. And what he meant was, don't start making, you know, a big party, a big seuda now, because we still have to finish off the enemy. But he wasn't forbidding, you know, anything. Snacks, right? Fruit. Light eating, tasting, because that wouldn't affect their ability to fight in battle. So that's one possibility. He said,
"What? You don't eat. You don't have any energy."
Yeah, but he wanted them to stay focused. I mean,
bagels or something that takes your energy away.
Oh, so good. So then you're in agreement with him. He said, "Don't eat bread."
But if you eat, nuts. Perfect.
So you and Shaul are on the same page according to this understanding, because he said, "Don't eat bread." He said, "Only eat nuts and fruit." Only snacks. That's one possibility. And Yesh Svar, the Malbim says, another possibility is that, no, he was saying a fast. He was extending the fast and
For, they were so fast. Would that include shrinking too?
Yeah, yeah.
It would seem even the more. You know, when you're going into battle, you're going to get like. It doesn't seem logical, at least to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they did a fast with drinking. I don't know. But he says the second possibility was just as they were fasting before, whatever that meant, their fast, because it was an ace tsara, it was a time of difficulty. So maybe he was extending it, and he was forbidding all food. And it wasn't clear, apparently, from the way that he said it. It says the Malbim, they were machmir. You know, he cursed whoever would break this declaration. So they were machmir not to even taste anything, just in case that's what he meant.
The word lechem in those days meant more than bread.
Always or could have meant?
It originally meant flesh.
Here they translated it as food.
Here they translated it as food more generally. Originally it meant flesh, and it could mean food in general, so it did not always mean bread.
Okay, so that's what the Malbim sort of, I think, alluding to, is that it wasn't clear exactly. It sounds like it's a vague term. I think it could definitely mean bread in some contexts. But you're right, throughout the Torah, it doesn't usually mean specifically bread. We have the man is called lechem min hashamayim. It wasn't bread, lechem mishneh. No, nowadays lechem mishneh. But in the Torah, when it refers to the double portion of man, I think it calls in the Torah even lechem mishneh. So there it didn't mean bread because it wasn't bread, it was man.
That's where we got the word.
Right. Right. There's a lot of words between. I mean, food in general and war have a lot of words that overlap, like mazon and klei zayin, and there's a number of other ones like that.
City Beit Lechem. It probably means house of bread. City in Israel now is called Beit Lechem.
Or house of food, maybe. You know what? We find lechem throughout. It says that Yisro sat. Lechol lechem im Moshe sat lechol lechem im chosing Moshe to eat lechem with his father-in-law. So, what does lechem? Did they only eat bread? No, they ate probably other things too. It means like a meal. But I think what the Malbim is saying, even if we take that understanding, his point is it either meant a meal, a significant meal, or it meant don't eat at all. Which both can fit into this understanding of lechem. So, okay. So what happens next? V'chol ha'aretz pasuk chafei. V'chol ha'aretz ba'u vayar, and the whole. It's an interesting term. The whole land came into the forest. It means the Jewish army. I'm not sure why it refers to them as ha'aretz here. Vayhi devash al pnei hasadeh, and there was some honey in the field. What kind of honey? So it seems that there's a machlokas here between the Rishonim. Rashi says that the honey here was devash kanim. It was a honey that comes from reeds. Sugar cane almost sounds like. A sap from some kind of cane that grows in Eretz Yisrael, he says. Other mefarshim learned that it was bee honey. And we'll see a little bit more about that soon.
Did they discuss at this point what exactly this was? A cherub, a shavua? That's later
it
on.
Was a curse. He says arur.
So then it would only apply to the people who heard it.
Is that true?
I mean, if you...
You mean the people... The people who knew about it, or the people who
heard? You didn't know about it.
Okay, so yeah, so we'll see. So these people are the ones.
But dvash, I think Torah usually when Torah says dvash, it means date honey.
It does sometimes mean that. Not always.
Not always.
I mean, when we talk about Eretz chalabu dvash, then yeah, there it means seemingly date honey. But we'll see here. We'll see another term that's going to give us a little bit, another hint towards what we're talking about. Vayavo ha'am el hayar, and the nation came to the city, I mean to the forest. V'nei heilech dvash. And behold, the honey was flowing out. V'ein masig yado el piv. However, nobody's hand went to his mouth. Ki yare ha'am es ha'shavua. Because the nation was afraid of the, here he calls it a shvua, promise, an oath, this curse that Shaul had made. The Yonah song of Shama.
If it's a shvua, then you can't obligate somebody else.
So it seems that there was there's definitely a curse here. There was definitely something that they were concerned about. The Yonah song of Shama behashpia aviv esam, and Yonah digging here. When his father, here it sounds like he made them a promise. He made them take. He gave them this oath to the nation. So therefore, vayishlach es kitzei hamate, he reached out the edge of his stick, asher biyada that was in his hand, vayitbolosa biyaras hadvash, and he dipped it in the yaras dvash, vayashav yado alpiv, and he returned it to his mouth, his hand to his mouth. Vata orna enav, and his eyes became open. They became alit, enlightened. So here we have it causing a yaras dvash. So what's a yaras dvash? So first of all, we may be familiar with the sefer yaros dvash, which is Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz's drashos. So now we know why Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz called it yaras dvash, because Yonasan here had. Was involved with the Yaros Tavash. At least we understand the connection. But what's Yaros Tavash? So it really depends how you understand what was going on here. If you learn that it was, like Rashi, that it was just a cane of some sort, what he calls a kane. So Rashi says it was a kane hadavash. It was the reed or the stick that had the honey. Again, it sounds to me like some kind of cane sugar or something. Or if you learn that it was a beehive, so then it would refer to one of the combs that was inside, like a honeycomb that was inside the hive. I don't know so much about beehives, but I understand there's something called a honeycomb.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be on the surface of a field.
Bees made it naturally. It's not like some person made it beehive. It's a natural bee.
It would be in their own nest. It would be contained within their own nest.
Well, we're in a forest here.
Yeah,
it's food for their children. So it's going to be contained. It's not going to just ooze out.
You're saying it wouldn't ooze out. Okay. So...
I say it's plant sap.
Plant sap.
Yeah, which has high sugar content.
Okay, does that fit the word kane? Dvash? It's like a reed of some sort? Or?
The other floor, I guess.
What?
The floor, there was some kind of exposed...
Right.
Sensei. Because beehives would not have exposed honey.
It says here that the Gemara says it was beehive.
Yeah, so we'll...
And they use it to make halakhic rulings, basically.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a second. Let's just see another couple psukim. Vayan ishmei ha'am vayomer, and each man from the nation answered vayomer, and he said, they said to Yonasan, hashpeya hishpia avicha es ha'am lemor, your father made the nation promise and said, arur ha'ish asher yocha lechem hayom. Cursed is the man who will eat bread today. Vayaf ha'am, and as a result, the nation was very tired because they couldn't eat. So vayomer Yonasan. So Yonasan responded, "Achar avi es haaretz. My father has dirtied." Soiled the land. Ruunaki, Aruenai, look, my eyes have lit up. This was good to eat. Kitaamti ma'at tvash hazeh, because I have tasted this honey. So that was Yonasan's response. So Shaul makes this curse, and Yonasan says, you know, look, everything worked out great because I ate from it. So yeah, so basically it seems Yonasan is saying this was a bad idea by my father because, look, you know, it's the, like we said before, if you're trying to chase down an army, you don't want to weaken everyone by making them not eat. You want to keep everybody strong. And look how healthy this honey was for my eyesight. So, yeah, so the Gemara mentions this in a couple of contexts, and right, in one of them it's very clear that it learned it was a beehive. One of them is more of just some medical advice, some medicinal advice. The Gemara says in Yuma, it says Tana Rabbanan Misha Achzo Bulmos Machilino So Dvash Vecholmine Masika. The person has bulmos, some kind of sickness, so you should give him honey and sweet things. Why? Because they're me'irin ma'ar enav shel adam. Because those things open up, they're good for your eyesight. Apparently bulmos affected the eyesight. And it says, even though afal pishing raya ladavar, we don't have a proof from the psukim. However, we have a zecher ladavar, we have a hint to it here in Shmuel Aleph, because it says, because Yonasan says, Re'una ki oru eina ki ta'amti ma'at tevash hazeh. Look, my eyes have lit up, have become lighter, I see better, because I tasted this honey. So the Gemara says, what do you mean that it's not a proof? Why? It sounds like a good proof. So it says, no, it's not a proof, because he didn't have bulmus. He had something else, apparently. His eyesight was weakened for some other reason, so we don't have a proof that it's going to help for bulmus, but there's a zecher to it, there's a hint that this, you know, that honey and other sweet things have medicinal qualities for improving eyesight. That's one Gemara that references this. Now, as you mentioned, there's a Gemara that references this in a halachic context, and it assumes that it was a honeycomb, that it was a beehive. So we have because there's a very interesting machlokas. The question is, does a beehive have a status of something that grows from the ground or not? So you have a beehive. I mean, it's not always hanging in a tree. I don't know if that's significant, but that was the question. How does the halacha look at the status of a beehive? So the first opinion that the Gemara brings in Bava Basra, this is the Gemara is in Shabbos also, is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And he says that it's like karka, it's like the ground. And some of the nafkamina, some of the practical applications of that would be, first of all, if you own that, you can now write a prusbel. One of the requirements for a prusbel is you have to be a landowner. So owning a beehive would make you a landowner, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Not only that, but it's not mekabel tumah. The ground is not mekabel tumah. A beehive, he says, is not mekabel tumah. Can't become tameh. And if it's in its place, if it's been moved, so then it's different. And lastly, what's relevant for Shabbos is, he says, that if you would remove honey from a beehive on Shabbos, that would be considered kotzer. That would be considered harvesting. Just as you can't pick fruit or harvest wheat on Shabbos, you can't take honey out of the beehive because you're taking something from the ground. The Chachamim argue. The Chachamim say, no, it's not like karka. You can't write a prizbol for that. It could become tameh. And although there may be an Isser Drabanan to take honey from a beehive on Shabbos, but it's not kotzer, it's not the malacha of kotzer, of harvesting, it's not an Isser d'oraisa. And I believe that's how we paskin. But the Gemara says, where does Rabbi Eliezer get this from? Why does he consider it to be part of the ground? So it says, the Gemara suggests that he got it from here, from this pasuk. Because it says, Vayonasan vayitpol oso biyaras hadvash. It's called a yaras devash, and it assumes it's referring to a beehive. Why is it called yaras devash? From the word yar, which means forest, which means, you know, like foliage, or so the Gemara says, to make a comparison, that ma yar, just like a forest, hatolesh mimenu b'shabes chayef chatos, if one would be tolish, one would pick from it on Shabbos, he'd be chayev achatas. After vash, arodim menu b'shabbos chayev achatas. Also, devash, one who removes from it on Shabbos is chayev achatas. That's what the Gemara suggests may be the source for this opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, which again, I don't know if we pass. I don't think we pass him like that, but
isn't there a passage in
team
involving Shimshon where he eats from a tree that has devash in it?
Yes.
And it used to be common for honeybees to make their nests in the hollows of trees.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that's maybe why it's called Yaras Devash. Now, I don't think in that case it was in a tree. I mean, that may be true, but wasn't it in a lion in that case? Wasn't it like in the carcass of a lion?
That's right, the carcass of a lion. Yeah, you're right. Well, in any event, it used to be common for bears to hunt honey.
Right. We know that from Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, is that one?
That's a very important source.
I'm sure I have a different makor than that.
Is it different if you have modern beekeepers, analysis to modern beekeepers, which, you know, they don't wait for a tree to grow, they may have a metal support, artificial metal support, artificial wood support, they can pick up and move around when they go to, you know, farm to farm.
Right.
And therefore considered, you know, one of that view that
it's... You want to know, I guess, assuming that we paskin like the Rabbanan. I'm assuming we paskin that it's not an issue midaraisa, but the Russian, the language of the Gemara is pater. Pater usually means pater aval aser. When it comes to Shabbos, you're exempt, but it's forbidden. That's throughout Masachah Shabbos. So it means you're not chayav achatas. It means it's a derabbanan. So the question is, would the derabbanan of taking honey from a beehive apply to a modern bee trainer, you know, beekeeper, man-made hive? It's a good question. I don't know. You could try to look into it. Interesting question. I know it doesn't apply to taking honey from a honey jar. That much I can tell you. Right. So there you go. Araya.
Right.
Okay. Fine. So back to the psukim. Let's look at Pasuk Lamed. Af kilu achol achal hayom ha'am mishlal aivav asher matza. So Yonah's song is now continuing. He says, first of all, my father messed everything up. He, look, you know, the honey was good for me. It lit up my eyes. And now he continues, and he says that, if only they had eaten from the, if only the people, the army had eaten from the booty of his enemies that he found, kiato lo rabso mako beplishtim, because now as a result we haven't struck such a strong blow against the plishtim. Had we only kept our strength up and consumed what we found from their bounty, so then we would have had a stronger strike against the plishtim. And they struck on that day the Plishtim from Michmash until Ayalon, and the nation was very weak. And now the nation hurried to the booty, and they took sheep and cattle, and b'nei bakar, and the children of cattle, v'yishchatu artza, and they shechted by the ground. We'll talk about what this is talking about. V'yochal ha'am al hadam, and the nation ate on the blood. And let's just read one more pasuk before we come back to discuss what's happening there. V'yagidu l'sha'ul lemor, and it was told to Sha'ul, saying, hinei ha'am chotim l'hashem, Lechol al adam, behold, the nation is sinning against Hashem. to eat al hadam, to eat on the blood, which we still have to define. Vayomer begadtem, and Shaul said, you have rebelled. Golu elai hayom evan gedola. Bring me, roll over to me a large stone. So, what did they do wrong? Yeah.
Usually, the limited number of personalities with those straight people. So, is the person that talked to John supposed to be just an odd person, or is that identified with another personality?
The person who said, oh, your father made a curse? Not unidentified. It says, in fact, it says, Ishmael, one of the people. You're saying often if there's an unidentified person, you'll have a medrash or that will tell you who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It does often, but I wouldn't say there's a rule like that. There's often enough that we don't have that.
Often.
It depends how significant.
I don't know where he gets it, well, how does he know?
Right.
Well, he has sources.
Midrashim usually it's a tradition. Torah Shabbat Peh. It usually may depend on how significant of a role it was. This wasn't so significant. He only had one line in the play, right? Right. So what were they doing here? So in Pasuk Lamed Beis, in verse 32. So we have a number of approaches here. The first is Rashi. Rashi takes note that it says, and they ate bakar, ubnei bakar. Bakar ubnei bakar. It says they ate cattle and the children of cattle. It says Rashi, it was oso vespino. It's right. There's an iser in the Torah to eat an animal and its child on the same day, or to shech them, I should say. And he says that's what they were doing. They were shechting the mother, or the. I don't think it applies to a father. But
calf
and mother on the same day.
Mother, yeah.
That's Rashi's first pshat. Then Rashi continues. That doesn't fit so well into the Vayochal Ha'am Al Hadam, that they ate it on the blood. Okay, you have to. That sounds like that was central to what they did wrong. Maybe you could. You could explain that, you know, part of the reasoning behind Oso Vespino, at least according to some Rishonim, is like a mercy that either you're sort of symbolically wiping out that whole min by destroying two generations, that species by destroying two generations, or it's somehow a pity on the mother. To witness, perhaps, because if you're shechting two, then they'll be in the same place. I don't remember exactly how they say it, but maybe, again, it has to do with the mercy, and maybe that's Vayochal Al Hadam. They were eating over the blood is somehow a lack of mercy. I'm not sure how to deal with those words in that approaching Rashi. The other approach, before we get to Rashi's second approach, but other Rishonim here learn that it was a problem of dam, of eating blood. They weren't doing the shechita correctly. It says vayishchatu artza, and they shechted near the ground in such a way that the blood didn't spill out. You know, they didn't use gravity on their side for the blood to run down, and they ended up with an animal that was full of blood and consuming the dam. And that's why, in the next pasuk, Shaul says, "Bring an evan gedola, bring a big stone. You have to shech the animal on top of a stone so that the blood can run down, rather than shecht it near the ground." That's how the Radak learns, as well as Rabbeinu Yeshaya and others here. Now. Rashi says something else. Rashi, in a second approach, says, Raboseinu Amru, our rabbi said that Shayum Makdishim Osam Shlamim, that they were dedicating them as Karbanos Shlamim, as Kachim, the ochlim lifnei zrikas dam, and they were eating it before the zrikas dam, before they sprinkled the blood on the mizbeach. A shlamim is an animal that's eaten by the owners, by the people bringing the carbon. However, you can only eat it after you've brought the carbon, which is sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach, and they were eating it before that. And he says that's what it means by yochal ha'am al hadam, and that's what it means that they ate the blood. That they mean on the blood, meaning that the blood had not yet been sprinkled, and they were already eating the meat, and that's a problem. It's interesting because Rashi says that the Rabboseinu amru this. That Rabboseinu said this. Usually that means Chazal, right? However, it doesn't seem to be a Medrash or a Gemara. It doesn't say that explicitly anywhere. What the Gemara does make clear, as we'll see momentarily in the next few Pesukim, is that it was Kachim. That the Gemara does say it was Kachim, it was Karbanos, but it doesn't say that what they did wrong was that they ate before they sprinkled the blood. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Gemara. Yes. We'll see that in a second. At least we'll have the Ramban learns there, because he's going to connect that to here. Yeah. So it's interesting that Rashi says that. It seems that Rashi is actually making an assumption here. Rashi sees that the Gemara says that it was kachim, that it was a karban, that they sanctified it as a shlamim. And now, so he says, so what did they do wrong? What does Vayochal al Hadam mean? What does it mean they ate on the blood? So Rashi deduces it must be that they were eating it before the Zrika, before the sprinkling of the blood, and that was the problem. Now in Parshas Kedoshim, we have a pasuk. Pasuk says, Lo sochu al hadam, lo sinachashu v'lo se'onenu. Don't eat on the blood. Don't do nichush, which actually we discussed, I think, last time, right? We talked about divining, reading omens. V'lo se'onenu, which is another type of omens about time, from the word ona, divining that certain times are, you know, good times for certain things. That's the Isser. But what's the first part of this pasuk? Lo sochu al hadam. So Rashi tells us that the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rashi on Chumash says the Gemara in Sanhedrin has many, many approaches to what this pasuk is teaching us. And one of them is this point. That's what Rashi says. Shelo yochal mibasar kachim lifnei zrikas damim. That you can't eat kachim before you sprinkle the blood. And that would fit with how Rashi's learning what they did here very nicely. There's a fascinating Ramban, however, over here. The Ramban says two other possibilities, and he relates both of them to our story here with Shaul. The Ramban says that, right, as I mentioned, the Gemara in Sanhedrin has many different drashos, many different teachings from this one pasuk. So says the Ramban. Where does it start? He says they're kulam in Torah. All the different interpretations of what this pasuk means are all deoraisa. There's many different ways to interpret what exactly the lav of this pasuk is. So he says, therefore, when Shaul by us says, you know, you're sinning, you're doing something wrong here. So what were they? You transgressed the lav in the Torah of Lo Sochal al Hadam, right? So what did he mean? What did they do wrong? What part of that lav did they transgress? Rashi learns it was that they ate from the karban before they did Zrikas Dam. Says the Ramban, Ki hayu ochlim min habehema kodem shetetze nafsha. They were eating from the animal before it died. That may be also a problem of Eiver min achai, Dam min achai, possibly. I'm not sure if it's included in that Isser or just this Isser. But he says, that's what it means. Vayatam el ashalal. It said they hurried to the booty, which means he says that kayit means do reis v'ochel. They were trampling. Basically, they were rushing and vayikchu telnu bakar. Right? They, if you read the pasuk, it says that vayat ha'amel ashal. They hurried. Vayikchu telnu bakar. Vayishchatu arta. They like shechted it to the ground. Like they're like
they're starving because they didn't eat.
Right? They're starving. They're like, you know, it's like savagery. Like they're just striking the animal down and eating in a frenzy. Right? They didn't cook it. Right? So
requirement to cook it?
No, they don't have to cook it. But yeah. So that's what he says, that they were eating the dam. They were eating it drinking the dam while it was still alive, which I guess would have also been a problem of Aver Menachai, of eating a limb from a live animal. That's one approach. And then he gives the pshat. What's al derech ha-pshat? So if you read the pasuk, right? Lo sochal al hadam. Lo sochal al hadam. Don't eat on blood. Lo sanachashu v'lo selnenu. What's lo sanachashu v'lo selnenu? They're both, you know, divining, omens, kishuf of some sort. Says the Ramban, pashuk pshat. Simple reading of this pasuk is that lo sochal al hadam is something to do with black magic or like kishuf or some kind of divining. Says the Ramban, what it means is that what they would do, what the Gentiles would do, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, idolaters, they would take blood and they would pour it into a hole, and the Shadim, it would gather demons around it, and that they would, it would be a way of like inviting demons to tell them the future. That was a way of divining. So he says when the Jewish people were with Shaul in the camp now, so they were afraid of the Plishtim, and Shaul was only asking the Urim Batumim, and the nation, they turned to other means of divining, of finding out what they should do of the future, what their approach should be, and they were ochlim al hadam to do this. So, and that's what it means. That's what it means that they told Shaul what was going on, and Shaul said, "Bagatim, you rebelled against Hashem. Hashem gave you a salvation, and you're still turning to your shadim, to your demons." And that is, according to the Ramban, what they were doing here. They were vayishchatu arta. They shechted the animals, gathered the blood together, vayochal ha'am al hadam, and they ate around the blood in order to attract demons, in order to be able to divine the future. Fascinating idea. So I think in the end we have a total of five pshatim, five interpretations of what they did wrong. Number one, they were eating oso v'espino, a mother and child. That was Rashi's first understanding. Number two, the other Rishonim learned that they were not shechting properly. They were shechting on the ground, and there was too much blood around left over. And they were, and Shaul said, bring a rock so we could shecht properly on a rock. Number three was Rashi, that they were eating the shlamim meat, the karbon, before Zrika Sadam, before they sprinkled the blood. And then the Ramban has two more pshatim. One was they were eating the blood while the animals were still alive. And number five was that they were gathering the blood in order to attract demons, attract shadim, in order to divine the future. Okay, and that is where we are going to hold.